Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 193. Holistic Psychotherapy with Sarah Hanna Radcliffe. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
I used to be a perfectly normal person, actually, who just did the regular, you know, talking, sitting with the client and maybe using client-centered techniques to try and understand what was going on with them and so on. And I'll have to tell you, I did that because that's what I knew how to do, but it could be pretty frustrating because, you know, you could support a person through a dark period and you're supporting them and supporting them and supporting them, but which is better for them than not being supported. There's some comfort in that and some relief, but I'm not sure how much healing, actual healing, as in they're going to get up and have a kind of a new life after they're done with you. You know, they're going to be stronger. They're going to weather the crisis or whatever. It's going to be meaningful to them to have that connection with you. But in terms of profound change, I never saw it. And, you know, it was frustrating, let's put it that way.
That was the voice of longtime listener and return guest, Sarah Hanna Radcliffe. Sarah Hanna Radcliffe is a registered psychological associate in Ontario, Canada. Over the past 30 years, she has counseled thousands of parents, couples, and individuals in her full-time private practice in Toronto. She practices emotionally focused therapy for couples, process experiential psychotherapy, energy psychology, EMDR, and cognitive behavioral therapy for parents. She's the author of Raise Your Kids Without Raising Your Voice. She conducts parenting classes, keynote lectures, and workshops locally and internationally. Her articles and comments appear in numerous print and online journals, including the New York Times, the Toronto Sun, and the National Post. She can also be found on YouTube answering parenting queries and on iTunes with her own biweekly parenting podcast. Sarah Hanna has been a guest on radio and TV shows in the United States and Canada. Her website, www.parentingadvice.net, offers education and practical advice to the international community on all aspects of parenting. She was also interviewed on Shrink Wrap Radio number 148, as well as on my Wise Counsel podcast. Now, let's get into the interview. Sarah Hanna Radcliffe, welcome back to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Yes, by popular demand. You're a longtime listener and supporter, and I believe you were last on Shrink Wrap Radio on number 148, speaking about ego state psychotherapy. And that was such a popular interview. People posted comments and people sent me email. And so I really know that people will be happy to have you back here on way up on now number 193.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah. And you were also on my Wise Counsel podcast where I interviewed you about your book, Raising Your Kids Without Raising Your Voice. And you will recall how impressed I was by your book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a totally different kind of talk, and that was fun, too. That was great. It's always good talking to you.
Thank you. You know, I have to confess, and I think I've told you this before, that I experience a certain amount of cognitive dissonance with you. On the one hand, you're into some very far-out approaches, which really stretch my credulity, and on the other hand, you're a very solid person who inspires my trust. So,
you know, a lot of people tell me that same thing, David.
Do they? I'm glad to hear I'm not alone in this. I just thought it was me. Okay.
No, it's me, actually.
Okay. Well, I'm inviting you to go ahead and blow my mind some more. Now, we've had some email back and forth, and I know you practice a full gamut of mind-body techniques, such as talking therapy, behavioral therapy, focusing, EMDR, something called Holosync, essential oils, herbs, exercise, stretching, lifestyle changes, food, energy psychology, your favorite being one I haven't heard of yet except from you, called WHEE by Dr. Daniel Bencore, who you say I should definitely interview, and also Bach Flower Therapy. So you call this whole mishmash, and I mean no disrespect, you call it holistic psychology. Can you perhaps, can we start out with you telling our listeners how you got into holistic psychology?
Yes, I'd like to do that. I'd like to clear my reputation.
Okay.
Because I used to be a perfectly normal person, actually, who just did the regular, you know, talking, sitting with the client and maybe using client-centered techniques to try and understand what was going on with them and so on. And I'll have to tell you, I did that because that's what I knew how to do, but it could be pretty frustrating because, you know, you could support a person through a dark period and you're supporting them and supporting them and supporting them, but which is better for them than not being supported.
Right.
And there's some comfort in that and some relief, but I'm not sure how much healing, actual healing, as in they're going to get up and have a kind of a new life after they're done with you. You know, they're going to be stronger. They're going to weather the crisis or whatever. It's going to be meaningful to them to have that connection with you. But in terms of profound change, I never saw it, and you know, it was frustrating, let's put it that way. And sometimes a client would say so. It's like, you know, it's wonderful having you here, but, you know, you know, my life isn't changing, sort of thing, right?
Well, I've been in that place in the past when I was doing therapy, so I definitely know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think we've all been there. Now, it wasn't that I was looking for something. I didn't even know other things existed, but things came my way, let's put it that way. I was working my office was situated in a multidisciplinary clinic, so we had a team of people like chiropractors and dietitians and massage therapists and all kinds of, you know, fitness trainers, different kinds of people were in this physical space that I was in. And they were looking at bringing in a medical doctor who had taken a course with Roger Callahan. Dr. Callahan was just developing his thought field therapy, which was the father of energy psychology. So we now call it energy psychology. You're familiar with that kind of stuff, the tapping and all that?
Yes, I think we've talked about it a little bit on one or more shows here.
Yes. So, well, I didn't know anything about it except what I had read in my professional magazines, which were full-page ads that said that Dr. Callahan had the cure for everything. Okay, he had the cure for depression, for trauma, for anxiety. Like it read like a very long list of stuff, and
that's usually a red flag, right?
Yes, like this is, you know, ridiculous. However, the doctor, getting back to him, who was going to come to the clinic, had actually gone to California and studied with Roger Callahan. And this is a medical doctor, and he was a very solid man in our community here, somebody I knew personally, and he was going to come, and he told me that he could help my clients get rid of their panic attacks without using drugs. And I knew that would be of interest to some of my clients who we were doing talking therapies with. So, you know, I told them that, well, you know, the doctor's coming soon, and, you know, you can go see him. He has a newfangled technique. I was shocked that the doctor had gone to California to learn this, but he said it was for real. So, now this doctor was also an addictions specialist, and he had two busy sides of his practice, the addictions and the medical practice, and now he wanted to bring in this this new thing that he had learned, the tapping, the energy psychology. And I guess he was just too busy. What happened was, you know, he kept saying, yeah, he's coming, but he never came. I waited like for about a year and a half, and I said, well, what's the story, my clients? You know, we're all waiting for you to come. And he said, you know, he's just not going to end up practicing at our clinic after all. Well, only because of that, I said, you know what, I'm going to take the training myself then. You know, because I had been talking about it for a year and a half to my clients, promising them something. And I saw that there was a training in Toronto, where I live, that was advertised, and I signed up for it. Well, I think I was the only one who signed up for it, because they couldn't get, all they needed was 20 professionals from all over the world to come to this, and they couldn't get more than two or three of us.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't happen. This was way back at the very beginning, where these techniques just seemed so unprofessional that nobody with any self-respect would really look at them. And that included me, except that this doctor had kind of, you know, drawn me in a bit.
Yes.
We waited another 6 months or so, and they finally did manage to get 20 people. I think three of us were from the big city here, and everybody else was from all over the provinces and the states that were nearby. And I took this training. Well, it was just a three-day training or something, but it was transformational in my life. It was just mind-boggling. And that was the beginning of my unraveling, the beginning of my journey into alternative things altogether. Now, Dr. Callahan didn't really tell us very much about what this work was that we were doing. He basically taught us, you know, tap here on your body with your fingers, tap there with your fingers, and, you know, then the depression will go away, or the fear will go away, or the bad memory will go away, or your worry will go away. Whatever it is, it's going to go away if you just tap here and there. So to me, this was kind of like walking into a room and I turn on the light switch, the little thing that's on the wall, and presto, light comes into the room. Now, I know there's a reason why the light comes into the room, but if you want to ask me personally, I couldn't really explain it. Something about Niagara Falls, the things with the wires. You know, like, I really don't know why, but I come into the room and I do turn that light switch on even though I don't know why. So I was willing to do this tapping even though I had no idea of why we were getting the results we were getting, okay?
Well, just for listeners, isn't part of the idea that you're tapping on acupuncture points while you're visually rehearsing either the traumatic incident or whatever, something like that?
Well, if that explains anything to you, you're way ahead of me. that's true. Okay, that's true. It turns out that what we're tapping on, according to this theory, and because my understanding is changing as I'm going along, but what they said we were tapping on was meridian pathways. And
yes,
what they said meridian pathways were invisible channels inside the body that are an extension of the mind and that are linked to the human, well, are part of the human energy system, of which apparently, they tell me there's many levels. This was all news to me, okay? Like, I thought we just have a body with muscles and nerves and bones and everything. Well, inside we have, they say, these channels of energy flow, which have something to do with the mind, and somehow our traumas and our memories and our feelings and things are carried in these channels. And if you tap on the outside of your body, it's something like doing acupuncture, where you... there's blocked energy, and you can unblock that energy or correct an energy disruption, as Roger Callahan would say, and then the energy will flow in a healthy way, correcting the physical, mental, emotional, and even spiritual aspect of the whatever it was that you were carrying in that channel. Okay, so your body, mind, emotions, and even your soul would be straightened out. Okay, this is kind of what I learned was underneath this: use two fingers to tap here, tap there.
Okay, good. That's helpful.
Okay. Now, but what I did is I did a lot of tapping on myself before I dared to share any of this with an actual live client who was paying me money, okay? Because I was moving now from somebody who was going to just sit in front of somebody and listen to them and talk to them to somebody who was going to say, now, okay, well, take your fingers and tap here near your eyebrows. You know, I mean,
yes.
I didn't even know how to make that shift as a... So, but once I did a tremendous amount of tapping on myself, kind of going through my entire life and every bit of baggage that I thought I had, and cleared out everything and experienced personally the miracles that happen in tapping, like the way the... something vanishes from your psyche. I can't even, the way your body changes, the way your feelings change about it, the way, I had to experience that for myself. And when I knew that it was, yeah.
Can I press you to ask, is there a personal example that you'd feel comfortable sharing, a piece of that baggage that you've let go of now that you'd be willing to expose to the light of day here for our audience?
You know, I'll give you mine. I have lots and lots of examples also of client stuff, but I mean, tapping has become kind of a way of life for me. I'll just say that some form, now like you said, I'm doing the Wii, which is another form of energy psychology, but it doesn't matter what I'm doing. I'm always doing something, let's say at the end of the day, just before I go to sleep, so that I don't have a whole bunch of stuff left over from my day that is going to give me troubled dreams or insomnia, tossing and turning and all that stuff. What I like to do is just before I'm going to sleep, scan the day and think, well, what was left? You know, was the interaction with a child or with a spouse or somebody at work or something I saw or something I read? What's still left bothering me, right?
Yeah.
And then I'll just, you know, focus on that and use the tapping for that. And then what happens is sometimes I thought it was something minor. Like, you know, I thought it was like, oh, yeah, that little... I'm trying to remember something that happened just last week like that, where I thought it was just like a little nothing. And it turned... When I'm tapping, that it sort of went very deep into, like, a childhood, you know, who knows what, and I'm sobbing. I was, like, shocked, like, because I thought it was a nothing, right? But I guess it was connected to something on the subconscious side, and that I didn't really, you know, I just didn't know. And at the end of it, I was, like, perfectly clear. Like perfectly refreshed and clear and had a great sleep and everything's fine. But it was just shocking to me that this little thing even went anywhere. Now, there's other times, of course, where I tapped on my own memories of very upsetting things, you know, like, you know, some kind of crisis with who knows what. I can't remember, to tell you the truth, all the different crises I've had. I can just tell you the general trend was to be feeling very upset at the beginning of a memory. And this is the same thing with a client. Like, a client will sit in front of me, and I'll ask them to give a number. We call this a SUDS, S-U-D-S, a subjective unit of distress. And we ask them, well, between 0 and 10, how upset are you right now? And, you know, when the person is thinking of something, you know, something sad, something, a loss, something scary, whatever it is, they'll give me a number, but it's really their face, their skin color, their eyes, the trembling in their voice, the tears welling up in their eyes. You can see that they're very, very upset, and they might give that an 8, 9, or a 10. So what they say and what they look like and what they sound like is pretty consistent.
Oh, that's a good point. I'm glad you're pointing that out, because the one demonstration that I took part in, and I was asked to call something up and to give it a SUDS number before and after, it wasn't terribly... convincing to me, and part of the reason probably was that if you had looked at my face, you wouldn't have seen that kind of arousal. It just wasn't really that big a problem.
That's right. Now, sometimes when a person's talking about a trauma, they actually can't feel the arousal right now, then in which case I ask them to imagine a movie screen in front of them and see the event happening on the movie screen, and then look at how upset the person is in the movie, that person being them, right? Okay, so this was like, okay, well, look at yourself 20 years ago when you were going through that breakup with your girlfriend there, and she just, you know, walked out on you, and take a look, use your x-ray vision and look right into that guy and tell me, how upset is he between 0 and 10? So, well, you know, that guy now over there on the screen, maybe he's 10, okay. So when he starts off, he can look into the younger self on the screen, and this could be somebody from, he could look at himself 20 years ago or 40 years ago or from yesterday, it doesn't matter when, he's seeing himself in a certain state and very, very, very upset. When we finish doing the energy psychology work, the tapping on the so-called meridian points, at the end of a few rounds of that, which may only take a few minutes, maybe 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 10 minutes, depends on what's going on, the fellow on the screen will be calm. So when he looks at him, he's like rewriting history. We're healing the way our life is stored inside of ourselves. So we're transforming all of this at a really deep level. When we go back to remember something that we've healed with tapping, we get the healed version. The new. It's like we took something that was frozen in the deep freeze, in a traumatic state, and we take it out, we thaw it, and we reorganize it and put it back in the cooked state. So, you know, it's now ready to eat, so if I can give you a meat metaphor for that.
Okay.
Okay, so now, I started to do all this work, but I'll tell you what happened to me, because it's not as simple as even what I'm saying. What happened was Roger Callahan had a couple of levels of training. One was called, I forget what he called it, but basically he gave algorithms or little recipes and said, well, for jet lag, tap here, and for phobia, tap here, and for traumatic memory, tap here. And he gave us a literal book of recipes, and that was his level one training. But on the level two training, it was a diagnostic process to see, well, where is the blockage in the person's energy system? And in order to find out where that was, the therapist had to press on the client's arm. Now we're moving from, I'm going to tell you where to put your fingers, to I'm going to stand beside you and put my arm on your arm. And I actually, as a therapist, was not prepared to do that at all. So I was kind of grappling, because in order to develop myself further in the skill that I want to learn, I had to take that diagnostic level. But I was not prepared to start pushing my client's arms. I just wasn't. I'm not a massage therapist, and it was just too big a leap for me, okay?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Now, right at that time, I had a pain in my side that was not, it was just not healing for some reason. And there is, I told you I worked in this multidisciplinary clinic with lots of professionals there. And there was an acupuncturist who was on our staff. And I asked her if she could do something about the pain in my side. And she said, sure. And she takes out a little pendulum, which is a ball on a string.
Sure.
And she waves it back and forth and back and forth. And I said, what are you doing? She's just standing in front of me waving this pendulum around. She says, oh, this is muscle testing. She said, you know what muscle testing is, when you press on the arms? And I go, I said, oh, you can do that muscle testing with a pendulum? You don't have to press on the arms? And she said, right. I said, teach me that, okay? Okay, so she taught me how to use a pendulum. Okay, now, I'm not pressing on people's arms because I'm looking like a witch doctor, okay?
Yeah, really. You're going down the rabbit hole.
That's exactly how I would say it. That's exactly how I think about it. I'm Alice in Wonderland going to a different place altogether, okay? Now, this lady was standing in our hallway at the clinic, right beside me, testing my energy blockage or whatever with her pendulum. So I thought that that's how you had to do it. So I got myself an office chair with wheels so I could wheel close up to the client and hold my pendulum in front of the client and see where their blockage was, and I learned the second level, the diagnostic level, and I'm doing these great things with the energy psychology. Like, there was this 85-year-old woman. She's telling me the story of the last time she saw her mother, which was when she was 18, and she's waving goodbye to her mother off a boat. Like, I forget which one of them was on the boat, but I remember the waving. And as she's telling me, and she's 85 years old, she is sobbing. The memory is totally alive for her. It's never been subdued. It's never been healed. So we did, a few minutes of this tapping work, maybe 10 minutes, and at last, this lady was completely resolved. It was absolutely finished. It was gone. And we know it's gone because things happen. Like, you can't even see the memories sometimes. It leaves your brain. Or what happens inside is, even if you see it, you feel like it has nothing to do with you anymore. It's like almost as if it's something that happened to somebody else. People use the same words over and over. Now, I've been doing this tapping many hours each week, 20, 25 hours each week for 12 years or 14 years now. It's a long time, maybe 15 or 20,000 sessions of this, okay?
Wow.
And I know what happens. Okay, it happens.
Yeah.
Although the client doesn't know what's supposed to happen, the same thing happens over and over, and we know it's a real healing. I remember from these early days where I'm telling you, I was just very in the early days, this little girl who had a very severe water phobia. She couldn't take a bath. She couldn't drink from a cup. Her life was crippled by this. And, of course, they've done many, many types of therapies. By the time they got to me, nothing was helping, and medications and everything. But within a couple of sessions of this kind of therapy, she was completely cured, and the family ecstatic. You gave life back to my daughter. She's a normal person. Like, real, you felt like you were like a shaman or something, like a miracle. And this is, like, you used to be a regular therapist, and now you're doing something like beyond, like.
Well, that's right. You might recall I went through some shamanic training a couple of years ago that one of my students has been quite successful doing. And one of the processes that we went through actually was using a pendulum and going through the chakra system and so on. But I'm still recovering from the fact that you've been doing this for 15 to 20 years, so that it means I'm 15 to 20 years late here.
No. I've been doing it for about, not to 20, I've been doing it, I think it really was only introduced, to the market here about 15 years ago, and I came in rather early on it. I was certainly one of the first practitioners in my city, and that left me looking really strange. Because people even know the word. They've heard of it. Sometimes they've seen it on TV or they've read about it, But at that time, boy, it was really a leap. And I am a very conservative person. You might not know it anymore, but, I was really just a regular, very quiet, conservative person. Things like this scared me, okay? So here I was trying to introduce this work to my clients, and they would always say to me, basically, you know, if it wasn't you, you know, I'd be running out of the room screaming right now, you know, like they, you know, just to even try and get them to do this.
Yes.
But anyways, they didn't realize, my clients didn't realize how weird it was, because even though they experienced miracles, what was happening to me is that my energy system was changing. And since I didn't know anything about the energy system, I was just going along like trying to help people get better. I didn't understand what was happening to me. So I'm using the pendulum, you know, sitting up close to people, and then I began to realize that I could feel the answer in the pendulum before the pendulum moved. I could feel changes happening inside of me.
Wow.
And so I read a book by this guy, William Tiller, somebody at Harvard University, I think an engineer, who wrote about the energy system and how we have training wheels for the energy system, the pendulum being one of them, where it sort of it teaches your energy system how to do something. So after a while, I stopped using the pendulum because I could feel everything in my own body. And then the client had no idea really what was going on with me. I would just say, tap here, tap there, diagnosing them. Well, they didn't know that I was diagnosing them. To them, it was just like, oh, I guess, I don't even know what they thought, right? But I was doing that because I could feel what was happening in their body, although it was freaking me out. And I decided at one point that I would actually stop doing all this work because I didn't understand it, and I thought I was just getting very odd. But a colleague of mine that weekend, that I told my husband, that's it, I'm not doing this anymore. And a colleague came, and she had taken one of the trainings from one of Roger Callahan's students, a Dr. Nakia, I forget his name, something like that. But anyways, she came with his book, and the book told you that you start off pushing on the arm, and in four steps, whatever it is, you should be able to feel all this in your body. I go, oh, it's supposed to happen to us. Okay. All right. So I continued on further. But I was having what I now understand to be, from all of this energy work, something like a psychic opening, so that I could feel what was happening in people's bodies, but I could also hear. I remember working with somebody who was remembering a traumatic car crash, and I heard the glass shatter before he told me that what he was experiencing was the windshield wiper shattering, you know, and things like this began to happen. So, and I had to learn to trust myself. And I was really very much by myself. And I think this whole journey for me, one of the most important things that came out of it was to develop a real inner trust of myself. Because before that, I would be like, what book does it say it in? Where is this and who is it? And please show me and please teach me. And this whole journey left me very much on my own, and it was quite a growth thing for me. So that was so I continue to do energy work now, but I learned many different forms of it. And like I did say, Dr. Benora has a form that is particularly easy to do, which is for the client, which is called WE. And I do recommend that you talk to him sometime, and he can explain it all to you. But all of the energy things work in a very similar way, and they're very, very profound. And so,
say a little bit about the WE. What do the WHEE stand for?
Yeah, you know, WHEE stands for Holistic Hybrid of EMDR and EFT. So EFT is one of the very popular self-help forms of energy psychology because it was really the easiest form to learn. A lot of Roger Callahan's students came up with their own versions because there is no one right way. I think every person can move their energy through their own system in their own way. So every one of his students came and taught a new way.
And by the way, if listeners are curious to get more of a sense of this, there's quite a few videos on YouTube of EFT demonstrations of one sort or another.
Right. And EMDR by Francine Shapiro, who I know you've interviewed, she never was thinking of her technique in this way, in the way that it was altering something on the energetic level, the spiritual level, the psychic level. She was talking about desensitization. So EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, as if it was like a purely psychological phenomenon, which I don't think that's what it is. I mean, EMDR feels very much like an energy psychology, and I learned energy psychology before I learned EMDR, although I practice both of them. But we has the benefit of being much kinder, gentler to the person using it than EMDR is, although it looks on the outside like EMDR. I'm going to let you talk to Dr. Benor about it, because I want to tell you, and I want to tell your listeners about a few other things that I got into after.
Okay. I trust your judgment.
Okay. Now, one day I was working with a client who came to learn EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, one of the energy psychology things that we've been talking about. And while she was here, she told me, by the way, do you know about HoloSync? And I said, no, what's HoloSync? And she said, oh, you've got to find out about HoloSync. It will help all the people that you work with. So I said, well, okay, give me a website and whatever. So she said it's something that causes deep, deep change on an overall level. Something, I don't know what. Anyways, really, I was working with her for a long time. She kept asking me how I'm doing with my research on that. And what I discovered is that HoloSync is a CD. It's something that you listen to. And it works on something like EMDR. EMDR uses bilateral stimulation. Like EMDR first meant eye movement, because the first thing that Francine Shapiro was doing was asking people to move their eyes left, right, left, right. And then she found that people sometimes got tired eyes, and therapists got very tired hands from guiding the movements. The therapist would hold up the hand to move the hand, her hand, from left to right and left to right. And the person removed their eyes from left to right. Everybody got tired.
Yeah.
So they developed these little machines like tactile stimulators that you put in your hand where they buzz your right hand, buzz your left hand, or auditory stimulation where it beeps in your right ear and beeps in your left ear. So what Francine, I think, realized, or what the EMDR practitioners all realized, is that it didn't have to be eye movements. It could be any left-right stimulation of the brain.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been having some interesting guests talk about, you know, is the subconscious mind located in the right hemisphere and the conscious mind in the left hemisphere, you know?
Yes.
We know that when you do left, right, the wall between the conscious and subconscious mind drops. So that's why, you know, in the old movies, the 1940s, where you see the hypnotist with his pendulum going, look here, you know, and the person's moving their eyes left, right, and they go into hypnotic trance. Remember those old movies?
Yes, I do.
Okay, fine.
And I've actually swung the pendulum.
Oh, there you go.
In a hypnotic context, yes.
Exactly. Well, what's hypnotics? You know, hypnosis. Hypnosis is dropping that wall between the conscious and the subconscious. If you don't do anything after that, we call it meditation. Okay, so if you just drop the wall and the walls are down and you're awake, it's called meditation. If you're asleep, it's called sleep. Okay?
Yeah,
but the wall goes down. If somebody's talking to you, they're either doing something we call hypnosis, or they're doing something called guided imagery. It depends on what they're saying to you. And if you are using the conscious part of your mind to talk to yourself, then you're using self-hypnosis or self-guided meditation, right?
Right.
Okay. So what is HoloSync? HoloSync is a technology that uses bilateral stimulation. It has beats that you're not going to hear, actually, on the CD. But they are titrated to drop that wall. But the interesting, amazing thing about HoloSync, unlike EMDR, is that it's done according to wavelength, brain wavelength. So in our left brain, we'll say the conscious brain, when talking right now, we're in a beta brain, predominantly beta brain wavelength, although all our other wavelengths are also operating to various extents. But we're heavily into beta. And then if we close our eyes, we'll slip, you know, lightly into alpha. And if we can go deeper there, we'll be in theta, and then there's delta, and then there's more, you know, I think there's more gamma. I forget what the, you know, brain waves are, but they get deeper and deeper. The ones that we're sleeping in, I think, is theta and delta. We have our dream life in there. Now, HoloSync is specially arranged to take you down. Do you know the way I describe it? It's one of my, in the Eagle State interview for you, a picture of the mind that I drew, where I have a circle with a line going down it, so that, let's say, 4/5 of that circle is on the subconscious side. And that line is the wall that divides the conscious knowing part of us from the unconscious not knowing part of us. Now, close to the wall is where HoloSync starts us off. It does not drop us into the depths of the mind. It's titrated in 12 different levels, so it drops you slowly so that you don't have what Stanislav Grof called a spiritual emergency or a psychotic break, right? We don't want to be dropped into the far end of our mind and all of our baggage is wide open and we just like crack up, okay? Holosync is meant to be very safe so that it drops you close to your wall, close to where you already are. And I think of this, although you won't see this anywhere written, but I think of it like a vacuum that comes and sweeps out all the baggage that is close to the wall. And when that level is done, you can actually purchase another CD from Holosync and go to the next closest level to the wall, and you move yourself across gradually over a period of 10 or 12 or more years until you've done everything that Holosync will do for you, if you want to. You can actually stop after any level. I mean, Bill Harris, who is the man who produces Holosync, sells it through his website called Centerpoint, centerpoint.com. He says that it's like getting your BA, your MA, your PhD. You can go as far as you want, or you can stop whenever you want. So this is, let me say what is happening here. The reason I didn't ever want to do Holosync is because it takes an hour a day. So who has an hour a day? At the time my client mentioned this to me, it was... I could barely floss my teeth, which takes whatever minutes.
Right. You know? Hey, that's my level.
I'm a busy person. Yeah, okay. So an hour a day was very unappealing. And yet this client kept saying, you've got to investigate this. Well, and also, I wasn't that motivated. I mean, yes, I want to help my clients, but this was going to be purely for my clients because by this point in my life and my career, I had done so much work on my own subconscious mind with all of my energy psychologies and therapies and things I had done that I really felt I myself was not going to get anything out of Holosync. You know, I felt that I was already cleared up. So between those two things, thinking that it wouldn't be useful to me and thinking that it would take an hour, which I didn't have, it took me a long time before I finally tried it. Okay, but I did try it at her urging. And the first time I used it, I was completely blown away. Now, my energy system is open. As I explained already, I'm very, very sensitive. And the first time I used Holosync, I felt, I cannot unfortunately describe it to you in words, but I'll just tell you something, it was extremely powerful. I'm very sorry to be at a loss for words for what it was, but I knew that it was doing something very real for me, and I was very intrigued. So at that point, I started to do some research and found that there were many other products, many competitor products, and lots of things that were cheaper, that were easier, that were different. And in fact, one of my favorite teachers, a lady called Anna Wise, who wrote a book called Awakening the Mind, which explained a lot to me when I was on trying to find out what was going on with my body and my mind. She's a brain researcher, and she explained how we can move ourselves through meditation, guided imagery, really, into various brain level states in order to awaken the mind. And if you awaken your mind, you're going to awaken your energy system. If you awaken your energy system, you will actually increasingly awaken your mind. A whole loop starts there, and you become more, you get all the benefits of what the medical and psychological profession acknowledge to be the benefits of meditation, which is better physical health. I mean, I've seen research that says you'll have 80% less heart disease and less, like heart attacks, strokes, anything to do with the heart, 80% less from meditators, people who meditate, real meditators, 20 minutes a day regularly. Where you have 50% less cancers, and if you do get sick, you heal faster. That's on a physical level. Herbert Benson wrote his first book called The Relaxation Response, which was on a very simple form of breath-based meditation. And the whole book, is about the physical benefits, the healing on the physical level from meditation. And then we have his second book. Herbert Benson's second book was called, I think, Beyond the Relaxation Response. Or I think that was the subtitle. But anyways, what he was saying was you get emotional and spiritual benefits. I mean, again, it's not just Herbert Benson from Harvard, but it's from all the research. Less anxiety, less stress, more calm, more emotional maturity, less reactivity. Like just happier, calmer, healthier. On the emotional and spiritual levels, sort of a bigger picture of life. And Herbert Benson's third book, which he did all these three during research at Harvard for over 30 years on his one little breath there, it was the breakout response, which was about the Einstein response, how we become cleverer, we become more creative, our intelligence expands due to meditation. Now, those are the benefits that meditators get if they are in studies that they meditate 20 minutes a day. Here, HoloSync is turning our brain into a meditating brain. See, the problem is most people in North America don't meditate 20 minutes a day. Okay, they may go to a short spurt of growth somewhere. They went to a yoga retreat, they got cancer, they meditated for 6 months using mindfulness meditation, or, you know, but most people do not really meditate regularly despite the amazing benefits of it. They might do it for short term, but not long term. Apparently in India, where you can, you know, have your guru and get really into it, you know, let's say learn in a monastery or something for 8 hours a day, you know, you'll get real, real meditation. And probably HoloSync is getting us as close to that as a North American can get to it. So now I've been meditating with HoloSync now for 5 years, okay, after that first experience. And I put hundreds of my own clients onto it. And I see that they put all their friends and relatives onto it. And people come with tremendous stories of, well, you know, I put my brother-in-law onto it because he hasn't slept in his whole adult life, and now that he's using HoloSync, he's sleeping for the first time, you know, things like that. Lots and lots of wonderful feedback on HoloSync. But I tell people, look, this is a product that they offer a one-year money-back guarantee on, so why don't you just try it for 300 days, and if you don't like it, send it back. Keep the little box that comes in and the bill and everything, and just send it back if you don't like it. I make it as a suggestion to clients who are experiencing stress or who are very anxious or, you know, just need a fresh reworking of their brain. And it's actually very cost-effective compared to therapy. Not everybody can do, you know, week after week of therapy out of their pocket, you know. So HoloSync is almost something that's going to help the person do tremendous healing at the cost of one therapy session per year, approximately, maybe two therapy sessions per year. You know, it's a very cost-effective way of cleaning out all of your baggage.
Yeah, let me just chime in here that a good friend of mine has been using HoloSync as well for, you know, probably as long as you have, or maybe even longer, and he certainly swears by it.
Oh, yeah. You know, what I found after starting it was that hour that I took out of my day, I get up an hour earlier in the morning. If I have to, I'll get up at 4:30 or 5, although I usually get up at 5:30 to do it, because it has done this miraculous thing for me. I've always been, you know, pretty busy person. I have my half a dozen kids, and I've been working, you know, and I'm just busy.
You're not exaggerating when you say you have half a dozen kids. You have six children.
I have six children, so, and now I have grandchildren and whatever. It's busy. So that what I found HoloSync did for me, and I read about it after I found this, is that it gave me hours extra of energy a day. So I can go with pretty good flow from 5:30 in the morning till 12 at night, you know, on a steady basis, something that I never, ever could do before. In fact, I used to conk out pretty much at 3 o'clock. Between 3 and 6 o'clock, I'd be, like, you know, useless to myself. It's just, like, very, very tired my whole adult life. And the first change that happened to me with HoloSync is that you know, just a tremendous flow of energy. Absolutely amazing. But there's one more thing I have to tell your people about before we get off the phone. Do we still have a little time?
Yeah, we do. We do. And let me just ask you, though, before we move on to the next thing, which I hope is Bach flower therapy.
It is.
Okay, because that's really where you and I, in our email correspondence, that's where we started.
Yeah, it's supposed to be all about that. Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, during that hour that you're listening to your HoloSync recording, are there other sorts of mental practices or exercises that you are supposed to be doing, or are you just really supposed to be sitting there in just as receptive a state as possible?
So there's a wonderful thing about HoloSync is that you're not supposed to anything. You know, if you happen to like to meditate, which I do, I usually start with some sort of focus or meditation. Like, just because I have meditated my whole life long anyways, you know, on HoloSync, what you're listening to is something that sounds like raindrops. There's no talking on the actual CD, and the first half of it has raindrops plus some pleasant sort of gong, like a little tone that's chiming there, but not in a tune. So you have, that's what you hear,
yes.
And then your mind is free to wander. So I usually start off with some sort of meditation, which probably lasts about 2 minutes, because the holosync wave comes and scoops up my mind, so to speak, and takes it so that I end up pre-associating to who knows what. All of a sudden I'm thinking about, like, just the best thing that, and I thought one of the funniest things that happened to me during holosync is I suddenly remembered a friend that my grandmother had when I was about 3 years old. I remembered the way the woman looked. I remembered her name. I mean, I never thought of this woman since I was 3 years old. And I called my mother up and said, hey, did my grandmother have this friend whose name was Doris and she had blonde hair and everything? Like, I just, it was such a strange thing. Like, holosync just carries your brain wherever. I don't know how it does that. You can't think too long about anything that you decided to think about during holosync. But you can certainly start off if you want. Or you can just listen. Just listen to the raindrops and just, you know, and you'll be drifting kind of in and out of the consciousness. Like, you're kind of hearing the noise of the gongs and the raindrops sometimes, and you sometimes not. And, you know, in and out like that until one of your levels of consciousness is cleaned out, at which point you're kind of awake and listening to the whole thing for an hour. Like, that's when you kind of know you're ready to move on to the next level.
Interesting. Okay, we'll go to Bach flower therapy next.
Yes, okay. Now, I guess I had known about Bach flowers, B-A-C-H. It's named after Dr. Edward Bach, who was a medical doctor in England. He died in the 1930s. So his use of the flower remedies, which I'll explain what that is in a minute, has been around, I guess, for 80 years now in the form that we buy them now from health food stores and stuff. And I knew about them from the time I was quite young, and I thought that they were really, you know, bizarre. I knew that they were supposed to help you with your emotional state and heal things and help you with stress or who knows what. I had some friends who were actually Bach flower practitioners. But I thought the whole thing was very strange. And as I told you at the beginning, I was just a very conservative, kind of black and white, show me the literature type of person. So they had no appeal to me. But after I got weird, as I explained the history of that, I took a second look at things. I stopped being quite so skeptical, you know, like things I could see now that the world was not exactly how I thought it was. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, there's many, many levels that I just didn't know about. I had to admit I was ignorant, and perhaps there were things out there that that held information that I should look about. I should learn about it. I should look into it, whatever it is. So, I have probably an anxiety gene that runs through my family tree, because I know that each one of my kids at a certain stage in their development, well, I know I've had anxiety off and on during my life. I don't have it anymore, I should tell you. I've got all these things cured me completely.
Wow.
Of anxiety. And I used to be a very anxious person,
uh-huh.
But don't have any of that now. But when my kids were little, and they're all, you know, big now, but they would develop little quirks like, you know, fear, phobias and whatever it was. And I remember I was on one of my kids who might have been 6 or 7 years old at the time, who had a very, very severe phobia of robbers, right? So when he'd go into bed at night, he would start panicking about, you know, could there be a robber at the window, or a robber's going to come into the house, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And for some reason, which I don't remember at the time now, I said, okay, I'm going to try Bach flowers for this. I had actually tried a lot of other things with him, but nothing was working. And I can't even remember if I tried the tapping, which might have, like, helped him to settle down enough to go to sleep, but it wasn't getting rid of, whatever I tried was not getting rid of the phobia. So he'd start, you know, at 4:30 in the afternoon, start talking about it eventually, and it was just overtaking the household. So I tried Bach flowers, and overnight, the thing went away completely. It just sort of just made the whole thing disappear, and I thought, wow, now that's interesting. And I started to refer some of my own clients to Bach flower practitioners for the help that they might have wanted when they didn't want to go to a doctor and take medication. Like, some people are happy to take medication for their depression or for their anxiety, and other people are adamantly opposed. That's not the route they want to go, and yet they're having strong symptoms that could really use some relief. Which is, you know, I'm not going to talk about, like, I'm not an aromatherapist. I am a Bach flower practitioner now, and I started to study aromatherapy as well, which is also using flowers in a completely different way. But I didn't continue with aromatherapy because it was really a very intense, much more intense study required there than I want to put time into. But I do refer people to aromatherapists and also to herbalists, because each one of these disciplines can help people in different ways. I'd say aromatherapy and herbal medicine is a kind of more pleasant form of psychotropic medication. So it would replace your Ativan or your, you know, for a person who's anxious or having trouble falling asleep or even depressed, these forms of intervention can be a first try instead of medication for those people who want to go that route. And some people would only go the medical route. They would never consider, you know, alternative therapies. And so you have to, you know, this is just for those who don't want to go the medical route. But anyways, Bach flowers is non-medicinal. It's called Bach flower medicine or vibrational medicine, but medicine is really not quite the word here. Though Dr. Bach himself was a medical doctor, maybe that's how the word medicine got in there. It's more like music. Now, if you put somebody in a room with some very pleasant music, and they sit there for an hour or so, even if they came in stressed to begin with, by the time they leave, their whole system will have calmed down. Now, they didn't work out anything. They didn't think anything through. They didn't analyze their problems. They just feel better. And that's because our system, I don't know if it's the body itself, the energy system, our the biofield around the body, I don't know which part, but something there is resonating with the vibration in the music. And of course we know that color also is a form of vibrational medicine, and there's many forms of vibrational medicine. So let's not call it medicine, we'll just call it a remedy for now, okay? Because, you know, any person can walk into any health food store and pick this up and see if it's working for them.
Well, what are they going to be picking up? Are they picking up flowers? Are they picking up little bottles of oil? What are we talking about here?
So for essential oils, they would be picking up little bottles of oil, so we're not going to talk about that. And we're talking about Bach flower remedies, so they're picking up a little bottle of water. Now, the biggest complaint that somebody might have when, you know, when they look at this, they say, well, what's in there? There's water in this, what it is. There's water and a flower. There's 38 different flowers that Dr. Bach used. A flower was put in the water. The water was heated either in the sunlight or by a boiling, depending on what kind of flower it was, for a few hours. And then the flower is taken out. So that leaves you with water. The theory is that the vibrational pattern of the flower is transferred or held by the water due to the heating process. And when you take a sip of that water or even drop it onto your skin, your vibration will be brought in line with the vibration of that water, which had the vibration of the flower. And the flower's vibration is aligned with various emotions. So Bach flowers are very specific to the emotions that we feel. They're not like like Prozac, let's say. It's kind of like your energy's up, your energy's down. Or you're motivated, you're not motivated. But it's very, very general. Whereas Bach flowers are very specific. Like, let's say a person was discouraged. Well, are they discouraged because they're afraid of failing, or because they're burnt out, or because they have no self-confidence, or because they have a negative way of thinking and they tend to get easily discouraged? Because each one of those would point to a different Bach flower remedy. So a person could learn what those remedies are by picking up a book on Bach flowers, although a lot of people like to work with a Bach flower practitioner who's actually studied it, you know, in depth for a long time, and then just have a practitioner make them up a little remedy bottle. Because you can take five or six different remedies in one treatment bottle or mixing bottle that's mixed up especially for you.
Now, it sounds a lot like homeopathy to me.
It's related in kind of, except that homeopathy works more on the physical level than on the emotional level, although it has an emotional component, whereas Bach flowers works on the emotional level. And the reason Dr. Bach worked with these flowers was because he was into the mind-body connection. His interest was actually physical and medicinal. He wanted to prevent stress from affecting the body, and he wanted the people to stay physically healthy, or if they were unhealthy, to heal the emotional blockages which interfered with their healing so that the body could heal itself. So when a person came to him with an illness, he treated them only with the flower remedies. Now, there may be this wonderful side effect, as far as I'm concerned, that your health will improve if you're on Bach flowers. But when I'm using them here as part of a psychological practice, I'm using them, you know, to help actually shift the mood for its own reason, because we don't want to feel overwhelmed, or we don't want to feel burnt out, or we don't want to feel depressed of various shades, or that life is meaningless, etc. So Bach flowers tends to make it that you're working downhill instead of uphill against the person's position or their nature or their thought process. Like it makes therapy go a little faster because it's like all parts of them are all on board with the talking part of your therapy or the other treatment parts of your therapy. Now, Bach flowers are amazing for children. A lot of pediatricians are now sending me children here who have separation anxiety, and the parents aren't going to stick them on medication for this, and the kid's just suffering. So people call their doctors and they say, it was a miracle, it was a miracle. The child would not go to bed by himself, he wouldn't go to school, or he wouldn't, learn how to do toilet training even. Whatever it was, the child's anxiety was getting in the way with a few days or sometimes a few weeks on the Bach flowers. So often changes that. So, I say to people, look, you can try it. I know it's a little weird, but it's a $20 experiment if I mix up a bottle here for you. And if it doesn't work, well, there's $20 down the drain. But, there's no side effects. Bach flowers have been used by pregnant people and nursing babies and nursing mothers. And they're harmless. It's really as harmless as water, because that's what it is.
And you've seen good results.
Oh, my goodness. Now, it's funny because I'm looking, there's two kind of explanations for why we'd have great results with Bach flowers. I'm thinking now of a businessman I treated, actually, who he had a very bad public speaking phobia and constantly had to give presentations at work. And he was in his mid-40s when he came to me, and he'd suffered his whole life. And he had tried everything. He tried medication. He tried public speaking lessons. He joined speaking bureaus. He tried hypnosis. He tried all kinds of interventions. Nothing helped him. And he came to me. I forget why he was willing to try the Bach flowers, but he did. Nobody actually believes in Bach flowers, so it's an interesting thing as far as the placebo effect goes. Okay, I don't think there's any placebo effect with Bach flowers because people think that it's crazy. They don't believe in it. And also, it doesn't give any side effects. So unlike something like an SSRI, like a medication like Zoloft or Effexor or something, which will give you some side effects, so you think it's working. Bach flowers gives you no physical side effects, so there's no help there. And nobody in the world is telling you that Bach flowers will work, unlike advertisements for antidepressants that say this is going to help you. Mm-hmm. There's nothing helping you. So when it does work, yeah, I think it's a miracle when it does work.
Yeah.
So anyway, so this guy took the Bach flowers, and for the first time in his life, he was able to give his presentations at work without suffering. And he stayed on it for a couple of years and then found that he didn't need it anymore after that. He was cured. And to me, this fits into what it looks like on this side, is that when we take Bach flowers, it's almost like it heals a gene. I know Dawson Church in his book that I recommended to you, he talks about epigenetic healing, where you can change a gene or turn a gene on and off. But, we tend to, we fall into where our genes lead us, with anxiety or mood issues. And if you can take Bach flowers when you're having an episode of any of those things, it seems to undo a kink in the gene. And you keep taking it when you're having episodes, and it keeps undoing these kinks. And eventually, you just don't have those episodes. In an adult, this could take a year and a half or 2 years overall. And a kid, it goes much faster. But it's terrific. And I'd say one other very interesting case I had with a child who had Tourette's. Tourette's syndrome, where they're making noises, throat noises, vocalizations, or motor tics, blinking, shaking, twitching. Well, the young boy that I was treating had a very bad case of Tourette's, and parents who were able to take him all over North America to try and get help. And unfortunately, nothing helped. And, when I told them, well, listen, we could try Bach flowers, they really thought I was... They were very upset with me. but the amazing thing, I don't know what, I guess they were desperate and they decided, okay, fine, it's cheap. Sometimes I say, look, I'm not even going to charge you, just take it and try it, but anyways, they did try it, and the child was completely, I don't want to know if you use the word cure, because I think Tourette's is maybe in his system, but they called me about 2 years later, said that he was having just a little minor flare-up, could we have another bottle? And then I saw them, about 2 years after that, and they said, yeah, that passed, and that was it. It was about a week long or something, that little flare-up. Now, with tic disorders, they wax and wane. But for this kid, nothing had been waxing and waning for, you know, many, many, many years. And, you know, some people say, well, if you give anything during a tic disorder and it goes away, that's just coincidence, right? Because tic disorders wax and wane. But fine, when they're waxing or whatever it is, take your Bach flowers, because the chance of them appearing again gets less and less and less. I don't think Bach flowers works, you know, equally well for everybody any more than I think Prozac works equally well for everybody. You know, like, people have different responses to it. But overall, it's certainly successful enough that I feel very happy to tell people that there is an alternative out there that's totally harmless that you might even want to try before you get on stronger medications. You know, some people are using medication because that's the only thing their doctor offered them, where they don't even know about things like this. And that's why I really wanted, you know, you to let your listeners know, and maybe for people to let other people know, there are things. There are many, many different things out there. And we have to keep an open mind.
That is the subtext of this whole interview. Yes. And it certainly challenges me, because I continue to feel a lot of trust in you. I'm sure your clients do as well. I think that's probably part of the magic. But just the fact, I guess, that you've tried all these things on yourself and you've you know, I really believe you when you say that things have opened up in you, channels have opened up in you, and you've been transformed by this work. You know, before I let you go, I just wanted to remark on your website. I went to your website in preparation for the interview, and I don't remember the address now. What is the address of your website?
I'm not sure which one you went to. I have one that's dedicated to parenting, which is parenting-advice.net, and that's everything to do with parenting. And then there's one to do more with my private practice and counseling, which is my name, sarahchanaradcliffe.com. So it's Sarah with an H, and then C-H-A-N-A, and Radcliffe, R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E, okay, so .com. So I have those two main websites.
Well, I don't remember which one I was looking at either, but I was impressed that, A, it was very professional looking, and there were a lot of features that I didn't recall seeing before. Now, maybe I didn't look at your website before. I don't know. Have you?
Probably that was sarahchanaradcliffe.com, probably.
Have you been updating it lately?
I need to. My husband, who is my web person there, I told him I have to put a paragraph on the Wii, which I'm using, as I said before. But I have a lot of information on there about all of the stuff that we've talked about. Yeah, people could look it up there.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes as well. I saw, maybe it was on the parenting website, I noticed that you had a number of e-books, and I think you and others have advocated that I should, you know, write some e-books and put them for sale on my website. How's that working for you?
Well, I've just started with that, actually. It's an experiment. Those have just recently gone up, and it's just another way of doing things. So I don't know. I'll let you know in about a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just can't seem to find the time or energy to write those e-books or focus or whatever, but maybe if I find the right Bach flower remedy or do my holosync.
Do your holosync and take some remedies, you'll be writing real fast.
Okay, great. Hey, it's always delightful to speak with you, and you're definitely going to be one of my regulars here. So,
amazing.
Yeah,
sir. It's great speaking with you also.
Okay. So, Sarahchanaradcliffe, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this chat with Sarahchanaradcliffe. If you've listened to these interviews on a regular basis, you know I try to be a good host to all my guests. It's just human nature, though, that I, like others of my species, warm up to some more than others. Now, even though I've never met Sarahchana in person, I like her a lot, and I feel a lot of trust in her, even though she goes where I might hesitate to tread. My sense is that she has very high likability. That is, I'm guessing that I'm not the only person who feels a quick and easy rapport and a willingness to suspend disbelief. I think that's a real gift, and I'm not sure it's something that can be taught or learned. Maybe it can be taught and learned, but I think some people just have a lot of it naturally. Now, in reference to the Bach flower therapy, for example, Sarah Hanna argues that there's no placebo effect because it's only clear-looking water, and folks express skepticism. I thought that was a good argument until I considered Sarah Hanna's likability. My own hypothesis is that's a key ingredient in her success with these far-out approaches. Now, I know she and others out there will be quick to point out that there must be more going on because she's not the only one experiencing these good results. Still, I think I might be on to a good study for some graduate student out there. I'm remembering in particular Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, and in there he cited research in which they showed people very brief video clips or sound clips of doctors and had them rate them on something like likability. I'm not sure that was the measure, but it was something like that. And with just tiny samples of behavior, what he called thin slices, the researchers were able to predict which doctors would get sued and which wouldn't. Doctors whose patients like them tend not to get sued. I'm not aware of any similar research on therapists or counselors. My hypothesis is that therapists with high instant likability will get better results. Any doctoral students out there looking for a research idea? You can have that one for free, but I wouldn't mind being mentioned somewhere in the acknowledgments.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
My interview with Dr. Raul Moncayo on Lacanian psychoanalysis can still be found on my other podcast interview series at www.wisecounselpodcast.com. As I mentioned in the previous show, his remarks were pitched mainly toward other professionals and may have been over the head of non-professional listeners. I'm still intrigued to develop a better and more concrete understanding of that approach and consequently plan to interview him again on Shrink Wrap Radio before too long. There's a new addition to our Frapper map, so a hearty welcome goes out to Jeremy from Beaverton, Oregon, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I started on podcast number 110 and am working my way to the present." Hey, Jeremy, thanks. And may I suggest you now start at number one and work your way to number 110. There are a lot of really good interviews in those early ones as well. If you're not on our Frapper map, you can add yourself by going to www.frappr.com/shrinkwrapradio. Let me remind you again that I have a short promo video under the promos tab at Shrink Wrap Radio, and I'd like to encourage you to grab it and put it on your blog, MySpace, or Facebook page to help get the word out. I continue to feel that this content deserves a much wider audience. There are also flyers under that promos tab that you can print out and post on any appropriate places where people put up flyers. Shrink Wrap Radio is supported by your donations. Look for the big green donate button on our website, which will provide you the options of a single donation of whatever amount, or regular monthly donations of either $5 or $10 per month, using either PayPal or your credit card. And thanks for your support. Let me remind you that you can advertise your blog, website, or service on our Top Spots widget on the site, and you can take advantage of the discounts on our website from GoDaddy, Budget, Brookstone, and PetMeds.com. Those discount codes are still there, and they do help to support the show.
Hey, this is Matt Van Nuys, and you're on the couch with my dad, Dr. Dave.
Okay, I'm running a bit long, so I'll only read a couple of emails from our listener community. The first one reads, Dr. Dave, I would like to start off by telling you that I enjoy your podcast very much and find myself listening to it at work as often as I can to catch up to your most recent. I started listening a couple of weeks ago and was not only impressed with many of the interviews you've had, but also the quality and the way they are conducted. For example, your questions, etc. I'm writing because I am having a dilemma that I thought you could help me out with regarding schooling. When I initially enrolled in school, I had the intention of doing a dual major in psychology and business administration. I was having problems with the school getting me into the psychology school for a declared major, so I stuck with business and applied all my electives to psychology courses. I was to graduate with that degree this past August, but then was determined to finish the psychology since I only needed a handful of courses to obtain it. So what's the dilemma, you may ask? Well, here I am, two courses away from graduating with a degree in both business and psychology, but having issues with applying to graduate school. I've done the majority of my education online, and I've also established a, quotes, career for myself in computers, which I'm completely unhappy doing. I have such a passion for psychology that it's the only thing I can see myself not only being happy with, but doing for the remainder of my life. I want to get into grad school so bad, but I'm confronted with the problem of not having done any research experience in the field whatsoever. Here's what I was hoping you could help me with, some ideas. I am at the in-between stage where it's hard to find a research opportunity that applies to my status in school. I was wondering if you knew of any things I can look into to help me in this area so that I can actually get to graduate school. Any ideas are appreciated. Thank you, Christine. Okay, well, Christine, there are a lot of details of your situation that I don't know about. As I go through your letter again here, I'm seeing again that you say that you've done most of your work in an online institution. So that may put you at a bit of a disadvantage as far as getting into graduate school goes. One of the ways it puts you at a disadvantage is there may not be professors available to you to whom you could apprentice yourself. However, that would be my first line of attack, would be to try to find some people either who work in the online program, if they're reasonably near you, or at some local university, and see if you could volunteer to be a research assistant of some sort. Try to meet with people in person to explain something about your background and the challenge that you're facing. The other thing to do is make sure you apply to or look into a number of graduate schools. I faced a very similar situation when I was starting out. My undergraduate major actually was in creative writing. I took some last-minute courses in psychology, and I knew I wasn't going to get into a doctoral program. So I applied to small master's programs, and one in Montana let me in on a provisional basis, realizing that I was going to need to do some makeup work. So you might try going the master's route first with the idea of getting the research experience that you need. The other point is that if you check in to various graduate programs that you're interested in, you can explore just how important previous research experience is. It may be that they'd be willing to waive that for you. So I think there is more research, or in the sense that there's more exploration for you to do, and you shouldn't make assumptions about what you need, but rather check in and see what kinds of workarounds might be available to you. I hope that's helpful. One more short one. Dear Dr. Dave, we had a brief exchange about a year ago. I'm a regular listener of yours. I find your work very helpful in my quest for more self-awareness and growth. I've also been in therapy for 10 months now, trying to overcome my shyness, but with little tangible results so far. Never mind, I feel a little down today. Keep up your terrific work. Greetings from Italy, and this is from Gianluca. And Gianluca, don't be discouraged. However, I'm wondering what kind of therapy you're getting. It might be that something is that's more targeted towards the shyness issue, if that's your main issue. It might be that something's more targeted in that direction might be more helpful. For example, if you were in a sort of a general psychoanalytic self-exploration kind of therapy, it might be that something more like a cognitive behavioral approach might be better. It's just something to consider. And so I think that better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio. You can leave comments on individual shows on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where our name is ShrinkPod. You can use the My Chingo button to record messages. You can send me MP3 files to the email address. And I wish you would, because show number 200 is coming up, and I still don't have any voice greetings about that. You can also leave them on our phone in the U.S. at 206-337-0622. So thanks to Sarah Hannah Radcliffe for another fascinating interview. And next week's guest is Dr. Daniel Everett, author of Don't Sleep, There Are Snakes. Now, he spent 30 years off and on living with a very remote Amazonian tribe, and we'll be looking at their rather unique Amazonian psychology. You won't want to miss it. Until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.